Well, a medieval art collection estimated to be worth over $250 million is at the center of a federal lawsuit filed this week in Washington. The descendants of the Jewish art dealers who owned the collection, known to English speakers as the Guelph Treasure, claim Nazi officials pressured them to sell it to them. Then one of them, Erwin Gehring, gave it to Adolf Hitler as a birthday present in 1935. The collection is now in a museum in Berlin, and the German government and the SPK, the administrator of Berlin museums, are fighting to keep it. Nicholas O'Donnell is the lead attorney for the descendants of the dealers. He heads the Art and Museum Law Group at Sullivan and Worcester Law Firm, and he's in Berlin. Nicholas, what is in this collection?
So this is a collection of what are called reliquaries. Primarily, they're works of art from the 11th through the 13th or 14th century, works of gold, works of silversmithing. A reliquary is something that was built to hold a relic, which is essentially a piece of a saint, to be somewhat macabre. And so some of them are shaped like altars, some of them are shaped like churches, some of them are shaped like crosses, and right on down the line.
It sounds beautiful.
It's extraordinarily beautiful. Yeah. It's breathtaking.
Tell us more about these Jewish dealers. It was a consortium of dealers who owned the works?
Yes. Yeah, so a consortium of three firms came together in 1929 and bought the collection from the Duke of Brunswick-Lüneburg, who at that point was the aristocratic holder of the collection since essentially the Middle Ages as a descendant of that family. They bought the collection. They sold part of it in America in the early 1930s, and then the rest of it as a result of this transaction we're contesting in 1935.
Well, as you well know, last year a German commission looking at restitution claims said this was not a forced sale. And as you just said, the Jewish dealers had already sold about half of these items. So what proof do you have that this sale to German officials was forced if they'd already sold so many?
We have a number of things. And I think it's important to distinguish the line of defense that the SPK has put out in response to this. The first is that the circumstances changed. In the early 1930s, in the possession of the full collection, the dealers set out into the marketplace to see what they could do, and they started that process. In 1933, of course, everything changed. And immediately after the Nazi ascension to power in early 1933, they were subjected to persecution. They essentially lost their means of making a living, and 2 years later, relented in the face of this persecution. In addition, there were other potential buyers for the collection who might have allowed our clients' ancestors to engage in a free transaction. And those buyers were told, on no uncertain terms, by the Nazi government itself, not to interfere and not to seek the collection. And that essentially fixed the market for good. And by 1935, with themselves and their families under threat, they really had no other choice.
And do you have proof of all of this? Do you have proof that the other buyers were told to back off?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Well, your lawsuit is using a law called the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act. What is that?
The Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act is a long statute that provides federal court jurisdiction over foreign sovereign defendants in a number of circumstances. It means that if you're claiming property that's being held by a foreign country and your claim concerns an allegation that property was taken in an internationally illegal way, then you can sue in the United States so long as the defendant is also commercially active.
And you're saying Germany is certainly commercially active?
Yes.
This is different from horrible stories of artworks taken directly from the homes of Jews. These were art dealers who were selling it. And on the face of it, Germany's claiming that they sold it. It happened to be that they sold it to Nazi officials. And recently, Berlin decided that the collection is a national cultural treasure. How does that change your case?
That designation doesn't change the case at all, and I think it tells you a lot about what the SPK understands to be our client's rights. I think it's, you know, with all due respect to the foundation and the defendants, it's pretty insulting to suggest simply because our clients were in the business of selling art that taking advantage of them in art sales somehow sets them apart from other kinds of forced sales or expropriations. The fact is, if this had been a factory and their factory had been seized, they wouldn't say that. And I think that's a red herring. The other point you mentioned, the very recent designation as National Cultural Heritage, at most could restrict the physical export of the property. And I think the fact that the SPK felt the need to do that even after the Advisory Commission recommendation last year tells you that they know it belongs to my clients.
Well, and what do your clients want? Do they want the artwork back? Do they want what it's worth? Do they want the money? What do they want?
They want the collection back because the return of the collection and prevailing in getting the collection back means that the historical record will have been corrected and that the slight against their ancestors, that this was some sort of free market transaction, will have been corrected. And that's really what this is about. This is about justice.
Well, we'll continue to follow this case. Nicholas O'Donnell heads the Art and Museum Law Group at Sullivan and Worcester Law Firm. Nicholas, thank you.
Thanks very much.